Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right. Well, Dr. Shimmy Kang's new book is called The Tech Solution, Creating Healthy Habits for Kids Growing Up in a Digital World. And I have to say, this is a very timely book. It would have been timely, I think, regardless, but currently with all the social distancing and online learning and things like that, it's even a more important book. Welcome, Dr. Kang.
Thank you.
So clearly you started this book before anything the world that we're living in currently happened. I'm wondering if you can kind of back up to kind of when you started working on this and like what was in the ether or how you were kind of like drawn to this specific topic at that point.
Right. Well, in 2014, I wrote a book called The Dolphin Parent, Raising Healthy, Happy, Self-Motivated Kids. And from there, I was doing a lot of speaking events, parenting seminars, webinars, and by almost 100% of the time during the Q&A or, you know, during our interactions, the issue of technology came up where parents were just really struggling with trying to navigate this very new world. And in those experiences, you know, I realized that we couldn't just give these arbitrary numbers like screen time and how many hours, and it just didn't make sense anymore, especially as, you know, technology is embedded in our lives. It's embedded in schools, schoolwork, and every minute. So I started to use a metaphor of a diet. I felt that parents understand how to feed their kids, and we understand that we have to start early and we have to be repetitive, and we have to educate and teach children to understand the difference between healthy food, junk food, and toxic food. And I started using this same metaphor for diet, for technology consumption. And I said, you know, we need to think about it the same way because it's so pervasive and technology impacts our minds the way food impacts our bodies. And there's actually three very specific categories of technology, just like we can understand the three categories of food. And it seemed, parents seemed to like it. And then from there, I did some webinars and, you know, BBC News picked it up. They found it was a great way to do a New Year's resolution for a tech diet. And then that turned into a book.
So when you started kind of framing this thing as the diet, then you didn't necessarily foresee it as a book, but just a way to explain to parents who've been asking you as a result of the last book, specifically questions around tech?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as a psychiatrist, neuroscientist, you know, I understand people really respond to metaphors and learning through familiar paradigms. And that's what the dolphin was about. It was a metaphor for strong, happy, smart kids, very 21st century kids with those skills of creativity and critical thinking and collaboration and communication. So I use the dolphin for that and a way to explain parenting that is shoulder to shoulder, authoritative, firm, but flexible, kind of the body of the animal. And you know, and then I realized that, you know, we need in these topics that are perplexing and complex, going to storytelling and visuals and metaphors that we're more familiar with can be very helpful.
So then as a storyteller, you know, having talked to authors of fiction as well, you know, a lot of the like sort of pre-writing process is like gathering information and sort of get into like different silos or baskets, right? So that you can then pull from each of those baskets as you kind of weave a larger picture. What was that process like for you? Like in terms of, you know, like you said, like there's three kind of different types of diet, right? Like, and you kind of group, you know, the hormones into the, how they affect each of these three. And like, so like, are you doing like full on like research in academic journals and things like that to find these tidbits, or like how do you go about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is I'm a psychiatrist. I specialize in adolescent addiction. There's really not very many of us worldwide, really, because, you know, psychiatry in general, and then, you know, adolescent psychiatry and then addiction. But within that work, I really dived very deeply into the science of the developing brain, how it's hardwired, what we know about children's and youth mental health and motivation. And what's really interesting is in that work, the currency of addiction is actually something called dopamine. Dopamine is our neurochemical of reward and motivation. And what I found just fascinating and disturbing at the same time was the tech industry has used the neuroscience of dopamine very deliberately in something called persuasive design. And when I saw that connection, it really sparked my, you know, my interest, my curiosity, and my desire to understand more on what exactly is being developed. How is it being developed? How is it impacting these young minds from a research perspective? And then, of course, as a clinician, I see teenagers, young children every day, families, thousands and thousands of people, whether it's online or in person, who are really facing the problems around technology, who are talking about addiction, video gaming addiction, talking about FOMO and, you know, body image disturbance in young girls, and, you know, kids just zoning out and can't getting off the screen, and anxiety and depression rates. And so I would say it really drew from my background as a psychiatrist, neuroscientist, my clinical work, seeing real people and hearing real stories. And then, of course, I'm a mom. I have three kids and two boys, you know, 14 and 13, and a 10-year-old girl. And my life is fully embedded with technology. You know, right now we're all working or at school or doing something from home. So I think all of those things came together and really developed this passion that we really want to address this issue in a way that goes beyond screen time, but to screen quality, to consumption, to how it's impacting our brain, and from a problem really that a lot of parents talk about to a solution. So that's why the book is titled The Tech Solution.
I was going to ask you, because sometimes, you know, in a title, where you put the emphasis on which word in a short title? Yeah. It's like the tech solution, the tech solution, or the tech solution, right? Like, it sounds like you're putting it on the last word.
Well, I think that's what parents want. That's what I want as a parent. I want a solution. You know, I think whenever there's something new that hits us, it's a little bit, you know, we're initially stunned and then we're confused. And there's been a lot of talk about the problem of tech, but I haven't been satisfied with the solutions myself, like a real true understanding, a true way to guide children and understand it ourselves as the parents and role models on this very powerful aspect of our lives. So yeah, the emphasis to be.
You mentioned your clinical practice. Was there any instance where, like, a patient brought something to you that, like, in the back of your mind, like, a little, like, flag went up, like, oh, this is something that merits, like, research or, like, further exploration in the context of this book or, like, this problem at writ large?
Oh, so many examples. Yeah. I would say, by and large, a lot of my young patients can't separate from their phone. I ask them to put their phone away. That's tough for them. I ask them to put it even on the desk so they can see it. Many of my patients actually want to hold their phone because they feel anxious if it's separate from them. Some have even told me they want to sit on their phone so they can feel it in their pocket. So I think that in itself really, you know, displays the profound connection young people have. So I would say majority of my conversations have some aspect of mobile or technology device. I would say about 90% of parent issues it comes up. Examples, I would say some classic ones I put in the book are, I give a story of a boy named Kyle, who has video game addiction, really star student, great athlete. But, you know, when he got to university, stress was really intense. And his only coping skill that he really learned at a young age was to play video games. And so that coping skill went out of control. I talk about another girl, Chen, who is really had burnout. She was doing all kinds of activities, but felt obligated every day to like and comment on all her other friends' social media. It was an issue of etiquette for her. She wasn't addicted. She wasn't a bad kid. She just had this real intense kind of social reciprocity that was taking up her time, impeding her sleep. I talk about all kinds of kids and families who are struggling in different ways. But at the same time, I also point out the powerful benefits of technology that allow us to connect and create communities, you know, crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, advocacy. I talk about creativity and the innovation aspects of tech, how tech has allowed kids to have accessibility to knowledge and information that wasn't available before. In fact, my own son, who has ADHD and dysgraphia, and my daughter has dyslexia, technology is a real equalizer for them. You know, they use software to read and write and help them. And I talk about tech for use for self-care, for, you know, sleep and mindfulness and fitness. And so I think in my practice, I've seen it all. And really what I've tried to work for is understand that kids aren't going to give up their phone, but let's guide them towards using it in a more healthy consumption, limiting and monitoring that junk tech, and really avoiding the toxic stuff.
Does that approach kind of build off your last book, the dolphin approach, like trusting in some sort of way of like the intuitiveness or like kind of like a generosity of spirit that like this can be figured out?
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, the dolphin approach is really what I call, like you said, an intuitive, collaborative, natural approach to parenting. I give the metaphor of, you know, you don't want to be a shark, which is an authoritarian parent. And we're seeing a lot of that right now. People don't realize that the helicopter parenting, snowplow parenting, you know, tiger parenting, all these metaphors of over protecting, over directing, over pushing, over micromanaging kids, which is truly a trend, is not effective long term for raising kids who have a sense of self advocacy, independence, resilience, critical thinking, independent problem solving. But nor do we want to be this permissive jellyfish parent, that overwhelmed parent that just, you know, wants to put their head in the sand and is like, everybody has a phone. What am I supposed to do? I can't control this. Those kids are at risk for all kinds of health problems and life issues. So the dolphin is that metaphor of being balanced, being authoritative, being firm, like the animal is strong, but flexible, being ever-changing and adaptable to your child's needs and their behavior and their personality and their age. And if you have many kids, being adaptable to their unique individual style, and being firm with your values of what matters to you and being flexible with those little things. So, you know, I think the tech solution draws back to this parenting style because in order to teach anything to our kids, whether it's technology consumption or food consumption, we know and the research supports very clearly that it's that balanced, firm but flexible, authoritative, collaborative approach that yields much better results, better habits, better health and happiness for our kids.
You mentioned adapting to different ages. Obviously, you said like 14, 13, and 10. So developmentally kind of at a different place, you know, school grades at a different place. So the necessity of different tech, how do you manage that? Like equitably, right? Like I have a wide range of children's ages myself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like a toddler to an 11-year-old, how they interact with things is vastly different. But, you know, if the toddler sees the 11-year-old doing something, it's like, oh, I want to do that. So like, how do you say like to your 10-year-old, no, you can't do what the 14-year-old's doing, or like, you know,
right,
make it work for everyone.
Oh my God, I hear that all the time. Well, why can he do it? Why can she do it? You're right. Well, a couple things. A quick response to that is, well, you know, she also has to take out the garbage, or she also has to help, you know, has extra, you know, grade 9 math homework. Do you want to do that too? Right. So that's a quick way. But I think in general, what I talk about in the book is when we're thinking about technology and kids, rule number one, I say, is try to avoid it. Delay introduction as long as possible, because little kids really don't need technology. You know, and if we're not giving it to them, then there's really no need for it. But I understand, you know, I've used it myself on an airplane and, you know, in a restaurant, and we need to live in the real world. So then I say, really look out for three important things before introducing your child to tech. These three things are real life social skills. They have an understanding of how to look someone in the eye and speak to them. And a toddler can start practicing this. Real life time management skills. They have a sense of when to, let's say, move from one task to the other, like, okay, breakfast is done now, we're going to go outside, or we can't play in the park forever, we have to go home and eat. So just an understanding of time management. And then the third very important one is some understanding of emotional regulation and stress and coping, so that your child knows how to manage their emotions so that they're not turning to tech early, very early in life to do that, to deal with anger or boredom or anxiety. So, you know, the child has some sense of, let's say, breathing, you know, taking some deep breaths if you're angry, or, you know, taking a time out and pausing, or closing your eyes if you're feeling anxious, or talking to their parent, or cuddling their pet, or whatever it might be, or, you know, playing with their toys. Some kind of emotional regulation, time management, and real life social skills are really important, regardless of the age. So I think that, you know, some 15-year-olds don't have that yet, and we want to develop that, and some 5-year-olds do. And I think that, you know, that's a key piece in understanding how to guide children towards tech. But of course, there are different stages. And definitely as we introduce more complicated tech, I say we don't just hand car keys to our children and say, here, drive a car. You know, we sit with them, we drive with them, we give them lessons, they have to take tests. And very similar with the powerful device of technology. So for example, when my oldest son got his phone, he was first allowed to text teachers, parents, and relatives for rides and homework, and that was it. And once he showed mastery of that, he was able to do some social texting with friends, like chat, you know, conversations. Once he showed mastery with that, then he was able to actually get some data and look up information, but only for, you know, educational purposes. And then finally, you know, at some point he was able to get social media, but again, it was for very specific conversations. So scaffolding that with the older age group.
Scaffolding. Yeah, I like that as a metaphor, as a way of representing. You mentioned emotional regulation, and obviously one of the key things is the like hormones that drive that emotion, right? And you group it into like essentially three silos or like specific areas, and the one that's toxic is, you know, you kind of look at what online behaviors or pursuits fall under that or like drive that hormone. So cyberbullying and FOMO amongst the ones that you discuss, and I guess you put it as toxic. Wondering if you can kind of talk, because a lot of people, you know, when they talk about like kind of like the dopamine hit of like likes on Facebook or Instagram or something like that, you don't necessarily put that in dopamine in the toxic side of things, but a lot of times it can drive like behaviors online in pursuit of dopamine. Is that something you can talk about?
Yeah, so dopamine is nature's, I would say, kind of reward to us for doing real survival things like hunting, gathering, and superficial socializing. So if you think of technology, hunting like video gaming, leveling up, gathering likes and followers, you know, and some superficial chatting, those all feel good temporarily. They give us a hit of dopamine. But if they aren't combined with the neurochemicals of happiness, of motivation, and health, which are endorphin, which comes from self-care activities on an app like mindfulness and fitness and sleep, oxytocin, which comes from meaningful connection and bonding, and serotonin, which comes from creative pursuits and innovation pursuits on technology, then we just get that little hit of dopamine. And that leads us to a cycle of addiction, right? So we get the hit, and then we feel we miss it because we didn't get the other neurochemicals that we need. And then we cycle into negative patterns. And that's what I call the junk tech, is the dopamine driven loops. Now, the toxic tech, I really framed it around cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. And it is released when our freeze, fight, or flight response is triggered. And that can come from any type of stress. So, of course, things like cyberbullying can be one of them. I think there is not a recognition of how big FOMO and comparisons are for young people. The fear of missing out and comparing your life to others that seems much better because it's fake and filtered is hard even for an adult, but even harder for that young brain, because that young brain is wired to seek peer admiration and peer connection. It is our evolutionary drive to do this so that we don't end up alone and die in the savannah back when we were, humans. So this is a very ancient need. And so the FOMO comparisons are really toxic for young people. Of course, cyberbullying, hate, but also some basic lifestyle stuff, the sleep deprivation, the blue light, the sedentary, not moving, sitting is the next smoking. It fires that toxic stress response. And even so much as the flexed posture, I talk about like the tech's neck, where you're looking down and you're sitting. And I tell people, your neurons don't know why you're crouched over and not moving, not looking at real people. It thinks you're in a cave hiding from a predator or a hurricane, and you're a fire cortisol. So just sitting in your bedroom, crouched over, not moving, but texting, and scrolling social media can trigger that very powerful cortisol-driven stress response. So if people understand these different categories, and understand that toxic tech really should be avoided, and including prolonged sleep deprivation, prolonged poor posture, prolonged sedentary behaviors, gambling, pornography, and all the toxic stuff. The junk tech, which is that mindless scrolling, like eating a bag of chips, isn't going to kill you. Pizza and chips on a Friday night's not going to kill you. But if that's all you're consuming, it will harm your health very significantly. So limit and monitor the junk dopamine-driven tech, and then consume the healthy tech that allows for connection, creation, creativity, and self-care. I call it the three C's: care, connect, and create.
Right. The dopamine thing, like the chasing of like those likes, made me think like eventually that can become like a cortisol problem, right? Like that, if you're chasing that hit.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
Like any sort of like drug over time, right? If you become kind of inured to it and you need more of it, the chase becomes longer and the hit becomes lessened.
Exactly. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Michael. So the things that give us this short-term pleasure, whether it's chocolate cake or shopping or, certain video games or like social media and alcohol, drugs, whatever, we know that without those bonding, the creativity and the self-care piece, those will turn into this cycle of wanting pleasure, reward, feeling good, feeling bad, wanting the next hit, because the goodness isn't coming anywhere. You're just getting in the cycle. Eventually, we see overconsumption at the expense of the other important lifestyle activities we need. And now we get into the cycle of cortisol. So we see it with eating, we see it with shopping, we see it with tech use, we see it with substance use. And that's why pornography is so bad. This particular use of dopamine is really dangerous. And people really need to understand exactly what it's doing to young minds. So then we can guide them not to not use tech, use tech to care for yourself, to connect with others, and to create wonderful, innovative things.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the subtitle of the book, is Creating Healthy Habits for Kids Growing Up in a Digital World. This is not like a head in the sand, like we should not have technology. Kids should be, banned from screens. Clearly, you're looking for a solution to the world as it exists and not as you hope it to be necessarily.
Yeah. And as you mentioned in your intro, like with COVID and the pandemic, this is now even more of an issue where, our kids are learning online and remote learning. We have to communicate online. So even if there were some people hanging on to the idea of a non-tech household, I think that is now gone. So we have to move and elevate the conversation towards healthy consumption.
Right. I mean, the discussions around a lot of schools are, even if they open, it's going to be a blend of distance learning and online learning and in-class learning at kind of like a best case scenario for the foreseeable future. So something like this is a very important and timely. So its August release is important. Dr. Shimmy Kang, the book is called The Tech Solution, out on Viking on August 18th. Thanks very much for taking some time to discuss the book.
Thank you so much, Michael. Yeah, thanks for your great questions. I really hope that, you know, this conversation helps people out there.
Wonderful. Where's the best place for people to kind of follow you online? Where are you most active
sure.
in terms
so,
of disseminating information?
Yeah, I just launched a YouTube channel called Mental Wealth with Dr. Shimmy Kang, and I give 3 to 6 minute tips, science-based tips on not just mental health, but also how to optimize, I say, our most powerful asset, our mind. So that's Mental Wealth with Dr. Shimmy Kang. I'm on all social media channels at Dr. Shimmy Kang. And my website, Dr. Shimmy Kang, has links to everything.
Nicely tied in, so it makes it easier to find you on all of those. Wonderful. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you.